the point back over
he's
to
gonna
Edwards.
He's going
to
kill everybody.
Oh! Okay,
hold on. Baker may be in trouble here, Denmark. Tries to clean up.
Baker, what was that?
Liquid are doing it! They're going to take it!
Good evening and welcome to Early Late Nights, episode 74, right here on twitch.tv/explosionnetwork. Thank you very much. I'm Kieran March, and thanks for joining me right here live on a beautiful Wednesday night. It's a good Wednesday. It was a bit stormy here, a bit windy, but it's been all right. It's been okay. I hope you had a good week of games. We've had a fantastic week in esports. Had a really fun time watching a whole ray with the StarCraft II event wrapping up at ESL 1 Katowice for 2019. We had another great weekend of Overwatch League. Dota 2 has been smashed into action with a new hero today. And I am pretty damn excited for just everything in general, to be honest. I think it's all so well put together and so well done. It's just been a good weekend. We've had Rainbow Six Siege today as launch Operation Burnt Sun. We've managed to see Operation Burnt Sunrise, with the latest characters being released as the Aussie Greats, being released on the brand new Outback map. And it's changing up the game for Rainbow Six and for many people involved in the scene, with Gridlock, and I cannot remember the name of the second character, because I'm an idiot. Gridlock and somebody. Oof. Put a pin in that, and Kieran will remember eventually. Which I really like how they're shaking up and how they're putting in patch notes for several characters. Capitao's fire arrows have been changed back to normal. The previous change was just noted as just way too good. So Capitao has been changed back. We'll see how they go with that. And the impending changes, of course, coming with the map changes. Is going to be fun. It's going to be a great time. It's a good time to be in Rainbow Six Siege. Make sure you jump in and check out the new operation. It's going to be fun. It's full of hope, full of characters, and they're mostly pretty baller characters. It was also announced this week that Super Smash Bros. Melee will not be involved in EVO 2019, which is crazy. Melee has been involved in EVO for over a decade now, and it's ridiculous to see how a game with such impact is going to be out of one of the biggest fighting tournaments in the year. I think this does show signs that maybe Super Smash Bros. Ultimate is going to be taking over the more premier role within the tournament. And Melee is going on its way out, as we discussed a couple weeks ago about the wobbling bans happening across America currently for Smash Bros. That game is on the way out. It's on decline. But we'll see. Maybe it might have a resurgence through other events. Who knows? We are there to see. As I've already mentioned, this week we're going to be covering the ESL 1 Katowice StarCraft 2 tournament with a very fantastic ending for a very, very long storyline. We're going to be talking about the new Dota 2 character Mars, how it shakes up Dota 2, and the impact it will have on the game. We're also going to be going in depth on Overwatch League Season 2. I'm going to be answering the question, why Overwatch League isn't dead? And we're going to be talking about the latest PTR patch notes. I went through them last week. I've now managed to have a chance to play around with them, to test it out a bit more. And I'm really interested in what's going to happen with the game overall and the meta itself. Now, let's jump in with probably one of the most wholesome moments in StarCraft II history.
Link's going to die on the bleed out here, but that's a lot of his sentry energy. And I wonder if that was too much of an expenditure.
Sue's also about to have Groove Spine, so we can fight over those force fields like you mentioned in earlier games here. 14 sentries! That's a lot of force fields, but it's not a great fighting army, Jeff!
Oh, he just goes right down the middle there. The queens are getting trapped, though. If he can get on top of that, get the damage down on that base right there. Link's coming out in production, won't be that big of a deal, but he's running low on energy. So much is gone. Supplies are still in favor of Sue. He's up in army.
Oh my.
Roaches are on top of this. There's a massive warping, but he's out of sentries. It's just straight fighting right now against 3-base production.
Well, he does have some Stalkers coming out, which are very nice against these Roaches. He's forcing evacuation here at the third base. Sue coming in for the natural with those Queens and those Hydras. He needs a few more Hydras and a few more Roaches here to stand and fight. Stats is starting to lose a bunch of units, but Sue has lost a lot of drones. Is this it? Can Stats break through? Sue's got that comp game. He's pressing it back. The Prism is in danger here for this Queen. Starting to take the damage here. Sue's just standing and fighting. Is this it? Has he
He's done it? The War Prism's gone. There's no third base behind this. That's going to be it. Stats you attacked yourself into a corner, and he taps out. Zeus done it.
Oh, he's done it. The curse has been broken here in Poland. Sue, you magnificent.
Oh my God.
Done it in front of all of us here, in front of tens of thousands of viewers, like a home, thousands of viewers here in the arena. We have seen magic happen on stage here so many times in Poland. This year 2019 is no different. What a final, and what a showing from Zerg. I'm so happy for him. I'm actually almost in tears.
Yeah.
I know how this feels. This is so incredible.
Oh, that's the smile of relief, Maynard. He's going to lift the trophy. You've done it, Sue. You worked so hard. He's gotten here before. He's came so close. But this time, here in Katowice in 2019, this man was able to reach up and grab that trophy. He's at the bottom of the group earlier, just a couple of days ago. He was down 0-2 here.
What a fantastic way to finish up that event. With Sue finally managed to claim his very first major grand final in StarCraft II after a very long journey of many ups and many downs. And Sue's storyline is very interesting. It's been going for the last 6 years. What you may not know is there is something called the Kong line in StarCraft II, and that came over from Brood Wars, where players who seem to be cursed seem to have the curse of the Kong line, where they would keep making it to grand finals and keep falling short just at that very last hurdle and not being able to win. And for Sue, it happened for a very long time, 6 years of making grand finals at various large events and then failing to secure that top spot. And Sue did it in a fantastic way throughout that whole event. He managed to take down both Serral and Stats throughout the tournament. Serral in the quarterfinal, Stats in the grand final. The grand final went to 3-2 with Stats going up 2-0 in the opening two maps. Sue was able to turn it round and really bring in for probably a game-defining moment and matchup. And I was really excited to see this come forward and come to fruition in StarCraft II, where the game is, honestly, it's the father of all esports. StarCraft II had a legendary beginning in South Korea, with many fans attending arenas, and the first esports superstars were born because of StarCraft II in South Korea. Now, what we've got is... Bless me. What we've got here is the game continuing to develop and continuing to provide us storylines. And these storylines are the most important thing when it comes to keeping an audience engaged for a long period of time. These players, especially with Serral stepping up over the last year and really securing his dominance in the StarCraft II scene, having Stats trying to rip down the young upstart, and then Sue always there in the background, always there trying to climb up, trying to etch his name into the history books properly. He'd won a whole bunch of events. He'd fought through many top tier opponents, but he just hadn't won a major StarCraft II event, and now he has that under his belt. To see the pride on his face and the complete and utter joy that came from him was absolutely amazing. It was such a wholesome moment to see him tear up during this interview, to see the whole monumentous occasion. Like, it reminded me very much of OG's win back at TI8 last year. It was organic and natural and deserved for the player. You could tell that this person had fought through highs and lows to get to that position, and Sue really did deserve it. It was really good. Now, the StarCraft world has changed its landscape once again, with Sue standing on top at ESL 1, Serral always being there as a very top player, and Stats always there to kind of continue on his legacy. It's an interesting esport to get into right now, considering that with other games in Blizzard's overall catalog, like Heroes of the Storm and Hearthstone getting very large changes, or in Heroes of the Storm's case being discontinued in its esports scene, StarCraft continues to hold its ground and continues to find its place within the esports world, as I think it will do for a very long time, just because of that legacy it leads with leading the charge in esports and really bringing those fans together and people to play. Now, Blizzard should be hopefully looking into either after the StarCraft remasters, looking at you know, doing StarCraft 3 or continuing that line of development, or if they're not interested in that, providing StarCraft fans with the next iteration of the game for them to love and enjoy. I think there is also some skill, always love watching professional StarCraft just because of the micromanagement of players. Very much, it reminds me of pianists playing on the piano, because that's what pianists do, where they've got such skilled micro control, they have such good understanding of what's happening in the game, where they can think about 20, 30 different things at once and keep manipulating them and turning them into a win for the tide of battle. StarCraft has a very good place overall. The quote really got to me though. So it's been seven grand finals. And this one was his eighth, where he finally won. And Sue tweeted shortly after a quote that I absolutely love. Rise eight times, even if you're knocked down seven times. And that quote embodies the resilience and the passion that esports athletes really need to keep getting back up after losses and keep pushing themselves to be better. So they can be the best in the world. So they can state their claim to how good they are at the games they love. It's something so important that we continue to see in esports, where professional gamers continue to play and continue to control the storyline and the overall course for the game. So I'm really interested to see how that goes overall, and I'm interested to go with how StarCraft continues to develop and evolve as an esport after this event. It's been a fantastic time. Now over to those wacky people back at Valve, and They're in an interesting spot. TI8 in 2018 featured the announcement of two new characters. Grimstroke, that was released pretty much at the same time in the International. And Mars, who my brain keeps wanting to call Ares because he's the Mars and Ares, same thing. But wanting to call Mars, where Mars was slated to a release for early in the spring, and since the start of the year, many people have been asking, where is Mars? Where is this character that so many teams have come to, like, where is this character that the Dota 2 esports scene is dying to meet and dying to play? And it was really interesting to see that development, as for many people, even though Dota 2 has become a resurgence in the last patch with some really good tweaks and some really big changes to the game that have really made it, really refreshed it and brought it forward in light for the Dota 2 scene, it's really good to see with the minor patch Mars being brought into the game. And I really love Mars's skill set. I really enjoy where he's coming up with for Mars in general, and for the character. The character seems to be is a melee character with, looks to be some kind of maybe carry or a mid laner or potentially an off laner, having an ability where he throws his spear at a target, impaling him, and then knocking back any of the targets it touches afterwards. If once you've impaled somebody, the spear comes in contact with like a tree or another object, it will stick that person to the object and stun them for a period of time. I really think this is a really great mechanic for the game to have. I really enjoy that kind of skill shot where being able to line somebody up with the overall kind of gameplay is quite interesting to see how the skill shot can just have a multiple of uses and how it combines with the rest of his kit. There is also a shield bash that pushes everybody in a small cone away and stuns them for a short period of time, I believe, or putting a burn damage on them. There is the shield. His shield actually gives him, as his passive ability, as the ability to reduce physical damage that's done to the front and sides of him. So hitting him in the back will still cause full damage, but the front and sides, he will have an advantage because of his shield, deducting the amount of damage from the overall physical attack. And then his ultimate, where he summons quite a large ring of ash zombies that kind of stand there. They're his ashen warriors, and they stand still and almost create a small arena for him. He is able to move around. Nobody's able to get into the Ash Arena once it's built for the period of time that it stands. This can be used as an ability to lock people inside where they still have movement and still have the ability to fight back, but to prevent other people coming in to help them. Now, it's really interesting, this the mechanics that work within it, with his spear being able to attach it to the outside of the arena, and if they touch the outside of the arena, it applies a burn effect to the characters. This means that you can force people to the sides, you can get them to the outside of the area, so they start taking that burn damage, which is pretty interesting overall. It could be used in combination with Monkey King's ulti, or another AoE effect that is going to largely impact everybody. And it's such an interesting mechanic, and I think Mars is really going to shake up the meta with many ways of his playstyle. He looks to be a very tanky melee carry character, and I think a lot of the times, a lot of the current carry characters aren't as tanky as they could be. A lot of them are these dexterity or agility based characters that in earlier levels seem to be quite fragile, and I think Mars is able to dish out damage, but also take and sustain a large amount of damage throughout the period of time. And this lends itself with this character change, and also the character change that's happening in Overwatch. Characters are a great way to change up your game's meta and to change up the game's pacing. Refresh it in another way without doing a complete balance patch. You can bring a character that's going to provide other answers, it's going to bring to light, it's going to bring forward some characters that might have been in some kind of obscurity beforehand. It might move some characters that were very popular back further down in the meta. It's a very interesting way to change things up and provide another level of play for people to really dig into. And I think Dota 2 does this fantastically. Dota 2 does this very well with its recent rank system changes, with the overall comp and patch notes and the changes it's made, the changes it made to your character, its map changes. I think it's really interesting to see Dota 2 continue to grow and continue to fully form for people overall. I think it's a really great game, and it's really good to see that for many people. Dota 2 fans, please reach out and tweet out and give us your thoughts on Mars. How does he fit in the game? What are your thoughts? Is he broken? I'm going to say he's broken, but Valve is pretty good at balancing characters when they initially come out and making changes when they need to for those characters. It is the luxury of being on PC rather than console, as you can make balance patches whenever the fuck you want. You don't have to ask anybody. It's fantastic. But we'll continue to see how Mars grows and how he fits into the world of Dota 2 in the coming esports periods. Now, Overwatch and Overwatch League happened over the weekend, and it brought one of my favorite plays in the whole of the Overwatch League. Check it out here as the Maestro Defran really brings it into his own in this moment in their match against the Paris Eternal on Hollywood.
Hollywood, where you do get stopped sometimes, and Atlanta with the opportunity to just break right through it and skip this whole first fight phase in point B. What is this?
What are they doing right now?
Oh, that is interesting.
That is a really...
Can you get over the roof there?
Oh my.
Oh my, what a play, what a grab!
Tosses in the grab, they're gonna make it work, and Cruz taken out by the ensuing self-destruct. Atlanta Reign breaking through that in the most stylish way I've ever seen. Ben Best in quite a bit of trouble. We must flee. Die in the point, that's how it works. And well, I learned something new there, Monte Cristo.
That was incredible. What a play from the Atlanta Reign. Death from above with the Graviton
now,
Surge.
Such an interesting
very creative, and that's just going
to
break them through the choke immediately. Incredible.
Changes it.
I mean, that's one of those great.
Now, what we have is this once again, this change to how people look at maps. And that small change of understanding, this came from Reddit as Defran and the Atlanta Reign really opened up, as they booped themselves over the roof and were able to give themselves a position from above to Graviton Surge the enemy team. I think it's really interesting to see that come through, and it's really interesting for teams and players to bring that out and bring that together and to continue to use the map. I've seen more plays in the last couple of days of teams being able to get up to rooftops and using rooftops in unique plays. I've seen on Icon World First Point, Reinhardt using the rooftops to get a very long distance charge. It's really interesting to see players continue to use and improve and be able to function in plays into professional gameplay that have been found or researched via Reddit or via other players in the community. It's really good. Overwatch League Season 2 had a fantastic start to the year almost. Fantastic start to the year, but had another great week with some surprising results, with teams that we expected to do fantastically falling short overall. Now, can we allude to this being a particular problem? Can we think this was an overall issue? No, I just think this meta, some teams have not been able to really adjust or expand on this meta currently and continue to grow problems. Let's go over the results for week three of stage one of season two of Overwatch League. And then check out next week's games as well. I'm going to answer the question, why Overwatch isn't dying. We're going to talk about the patch notes and one of my opinions of the up and going patch, as well as some few minor things for Overwatch in general. So let's jump right in to last week, which kicked off with the Washington Justice versus the Philadelphia Fusion. Philly look okay. They don't look great. Like, Boombox came back into the roster this week, which seemed to fix a couple issues they were having, but Sado still doesn't seem to be connecting with the rest of the team in ways that we thought he would. The Boston Uprising 3-1 the Seoul Dynasty, with Fusions returning back to the roster. His leadership really managed to lead them to a very resounding win over the Seoul Dynasty. Florida Mayhem and Guangzhou Charge went for the full five maps, with the Charge winning overall. The Charge continued to impress, but at the same time, I think I'd like to see them challenged a bit more in the coming weeks, at least before stages end. And the San Francisco Shock Hangzhou Spark match finished 3-1 to the San Francisco Shock. And the Shock really impressed me, because before this match, on a graphic by the Overwatch League, with Zoe commenting on it, was a stats page about the main tank player Super for the San Francisco Shock. Now, this called Super Bad, literally Super Bad, and continued to kind of pull up his failing stats for the first couple of weeks of Overwatch League. I'm really happy that this week Super came and answered those criticisms with two resoundingly good showings on the main tank role, and it seems the Shock have really rested on the fact of Super being their main tank player. They don't seem to be swapping as much with Smurf. They had this whole thing going on where they'd have one team kind of come in and play control, and then another team come in and play the rest of it. Super seems to be their reliant main tank for this time, and I'm really excited to see that. Day two kicked off with the London Spitfire coming in with the LA Gladiators. And this was originally hoped to be a big day for the LA Gladiators. Now, for many people, it's not the overall, it was the coming day where people had hoped that everything would change for the LA Gladiators, with many fans being that the Decay would be joining the roster because he finally turned 18 and he'd be playing in his first game. Decay would replace Shawfor in the lineup for both games this weekend, and even though he continued to display an insane level of gameplay and understanding of the game, the team looked lost. Overall, through both games, the Spitfire game and their game later in the week, they just looked lost overall. Raw seemed to be feeding, the team just seemed to be in disarray, and it brings up the question, does removing an important piece of the communication and structure of the team Shawfor have that much of an impact on the team overall? The London Spitfire continue to look a lot better, now sitting Bernering comfortably on the bench, with Guard taking up Brigitte duties as well as Sombra duties. London Spitfire still look kind of rocky when it comes to GOATs, but they are turning it around with a 3-game winning streak so far in the season. Toronto Defiant took on the New York Excelsior, and New York looked really damn good. 3-1 to the New York Excelsior. Defiant managed to take a map off. Defiant are a very good team, and they do really show promise throughout the whole event. They show the potential to be a top team. They're currently sitting at 7th, so they're very likely to make stage playoffs for stage 1. But we'll see how they go in the coming period of time, coming stage. Vancouver Titans 3-1 the LA Valiant. LA Valiant looks... So they're 0-5 by the end of this weekend. 0-5. And that's not the position that many thought this team would be in for the season. I guess many people thought that this team would be overall kind of poor, kind of strong. And I think they're playing pretty poorly. They seem to be unsure of GOATs and playing as a team. There might be some internal issues. Super looks very frustrated at times on player cams. They keep switching between Kuki and Custer, unsure of which way or which direction they're wanting to go. And I think many people in the community are very unsure about why Kuki is in that role currently. The Shanghai Dragons 4-0 the Chengdu Hunters, continuing with their first winning streak ever, two games in a row, as they 4-0'd the Chengdu Hunters. Chengdu are in a bit of a spot where teams have worked them out now. Teams have definitely worked them out. Their resistance to playing goats and resistance to playing in the team format, like many other teams are with the current meta state, it's hard to see Chengdu Hunters getting wins at the minute until they fix up and make some changes in their team. Now, Atlanta Reign, with the game of the week against the Paris Eternal, 4-0 to the Atlanta Reign. This is the game I suggest you go back and watch. The game with a highlight with Dufresne using the roof to flick himself over in Hollywood and from above grab the whole team. And Atlanta Reign are so impressive because their play style is so in your face. Their players are full of trash talk and full of overall just attitude. I think with players like Dufresne and Dogman kind of taking over the mic and really trash talking teams is incredible. And I think it's something the Overwatch League has needed, is a team that's in your face, a team that isn't too overly professional. They're still professional, but they're trash talking. They don't care what you say. They're going to play and they're going to play well. And I'm really excited. Paris Eternal looked shocked for most of that game. Not San Francisco shocked, but just generally overall shocked at where the game was going. Soon did not look comfortable anymore on that Zarya, and the team overall just got picked off, and Cruz's aggression seemed to be dealt with, and it'll be interesting to see how teams combat this in the coming weeks. The Houston Outlaws 3-1 to Florida Mayhem. Florida looked pretty damn rough. They look a lot better with the addition of McGravy and Apply playing more in the roster, but overall, that team is going to either have to wait for a meta change or put a lot of effort into becoming better. They have the right pieces. They just seem to put it together. The Houston Outlaws, I guess. And then the San Francisco Shock 4-0'd Washington Justice. And this is what you want to do. As a top-rated, top-league team, you need to go out there and you need to smash the living crap out of the Washington Justice. You just need to make sure you 4-0 them. You do not drop a map. You look strong the entire time. And that's exactly what the Shock did. I want to give a lot of respect and credit to the Washington Justice. There was a moment in the match where Sinatra's keyboard either malfunctioned or stopped working, and he found himself in the middle of right in front of their team alone. The game was paused as the keyboard issue was fixed, and then instead of taking advantage of this technical difficulty, the Washington Justice allowed Sinatra to go back to his team and rejoin them. Which I think is a very good display of sportsmanship and really good. And I don't know if all teams would have allowed that. Now, the Dallas Fuel and the Shanghai Dragons finish off day three with the most controversial ending to a map, as on Dorado with the win in their hands or win in their sights. The Shanghai Dragons managed to move the card in overtime to the end of the first point. Waiting for the doors to close, the rest of the team punched up, probably the same thing. But Young Jin, who was on the cart, moved too far off the cart and allowed overtime to expire while it still remained at the end of point A. Dallas Fuel were able to turn this around, taking the game to a map 5 and then finishing them off 3-2. The Dallas Fuel really crept in here and they really shouldn't have won. I think Young Jin's going to be haunted by that moment for a very long time. And the Dragons still show that there are still some problems in that team. It's not all daisies and perfectness. Now for the final day, Monday, the Toronto Defiant took it 3-1 against the Boston Uprising. Boston did not look good here. Boston did not look good, and Toronto looked fantastic the whole way through. Hangzhou Spark versus the LA Gladiators went 3-1 to the LA Gladiators. Gladiators continuing just to look rough. And Spark being this team that's on again, off again, are they a top-rated team? Are they trash? Who knows, but they seem to have settled with Gushue as the main tank player for that team in a more standard role. The Guangzhou Charge 3-1 the LA Valiant, absolutely decimating them. The Valiant's got some issues, and they do need to work on that, and they do need to look into what they can do to better themselves. The New York Excelsior 3-1 the Seoul Dynasty. This in an overall hard map for the Dynasty, and I think they won really well with their Nambani hold, but the Excelsior were just overall a better team, as they always are, and probably the best team in the league right now. look ahead to week four. Week four is going to feature a bit of a weird start with the first 2 days only having three matches each, with the first one starting 12:30 p.m. Friday, the Atlanta Reign versus the LA Gladiators. I see in the current state the Atlanta Reign taking this game to 3-1. I think Gladiators have some hope, and hopefully they've gone and worked on a lot of stuff. Hopefully they've found a way for Shawfor to be more integrated in the team, but we'll see. LA Valiant versus the Philadelphia Fusion. Valiant, I think it'll be 3-1. I think this is the game where some hope could be created for Valiant. I think you get a win here, but I doubt it. Defiant will 4-0 the Chengdu Hunters. As I said, the Hunters have been figured out. The Paris Eternal versus the Vancouver Titans. The Titans are going to win this one, 3-1. I'd like it to go to five games, but I don't think the Paris we saw last week could really get anywhere close to Vancouver Titans. New York Excelsior versus San Francisco Shock. I think it's going to go 3-2 to New York. I think San Fran's going to put up a very good fight. It's going to be a very entertaining game, but I don't have hope. I don't have hope when it comes to the Shock. The Dallas Fuel and the Shanghai Dragons are going to be playing again 2 weeks in a row, and I was very confused by these standings and these options when it came to the overall game. So we'll see how this goes with the Dallas Fuel taking the game. I reckon this will go 3-1 to the Dragons. 3-1 to the Dragons. Fuck it. I really hope Dallas wins, though. Back to a normal schedule on day three with the Los Angeles Valiant taking on the Houston Outlaws. I reckon this will go 3-2 to the Houston Outlaws. Seoul Dynasty versus Justice is going to be a 4-0 to the Dynasty. Guangzhou Charge versus the LA Gladiators is going to be 3-1 to the Charge. Spark and Defiant is going to go 3-2 to Defiant. Shock versus Paris is going to be 3-2 to Shock. Spitfire and Dragons is going to be a 3-1 to the Spitfire. Mayhem is going to be a 3-1 to the Boston Uprising. And Vancouver Titans will 4-0 the Chengdu Hunters quite easily. It's going to be an interesting weekend overall of Overwatch League action. I'm really excited to see exactly how it goes and where the teams are. I think many of the teams in the league currently are doing interestingly. LA Valiant have had such a tough run. Like, just to have... So week one, they played Spark. Week two, they've played New York and Defiant. Vancouver Titans and Charge. You've got Philly and Houston, winnable games. And that's it. These are the last two games of the stage for them. They get a week off in the last week. And I'm interested to see how they can pull things together. They're not going to make the stage final. So they get 3 weeks off here before this game starts. And their first game of stage two is Shock. Yuck. But I'm interested to see how they go about it. Is there internal issues going on? What the fuck is going on with the Valiant? Same thing for the LA Gladiators. What is going on for Gladiators? They started out 3-2, like 1-1, and then they proceeded to lose. They lost this in a close game. Lost this in a close game. This wasn't a close game. And they look lost, and I'm really worried for that. I'm really worried for how they go continually with that. Overall, the Atlanta Reign look fucking fantastic. Overall, fucking fantastic. Now, with the coming PTR changes, though, I think a lot will change in the Overwatch League. I think this does kill GOATs. 100%. This one doesn't kill it, but it makes GOATs a lot weaker, and GOATs becomes harder to play. I think overall, it's just... there's going to be a lot of answers for GOATs. And it really puts an emphasis on characters that are very good with GOATs. The Lucio change is going to send Lucio probably back to obscurity a little bit, which I'm worried about. We're going to have that Junkrat buffs huge. I think Baptiste's overall impact on the game is going to be very big and very, very interesting for the game overall and for how Overwatch is like to be played. It's an interesting world of Overwatch, and it's been an interesting time with Jeff Kaplan talking about the competitive scene currently. And for a long time, the competitive scene has been very back and forth on what the fuck is going on with it. You know, with ranked play in Overwatch, there's been such a hard time of people queuing or not having fun in that system, not being able to play the characters they want to play. Now, looks to be coming that there's a role queue system coming through with you selecting your role before the game starts and you being locked in that role for the ranked game. I think that's fucking awesome. It's going to be rough for DPS players like myself who are going to be, you know, 20 minutes possibly for looking for a ranked game, but I think there's ways that they can combat that. Overall, I really like the role queue system, and I'm happy that Jeff Kaplan and the Overwatch team have come around to looking at this more overall. I think it shows that they're happy to enforce a 2-2-2 meta with the change to GOATs. We're going to be seeing more, you know, I think people said, and it's an interesting point, that when you put more limitations on something, people get more inspired and more interested in how they can use that. Like when Overwatch initially launched, it had locked in the 2-2-2 format. Like, it, not locked in, but it had the, sorry, it was no characters were one only per team. And that's really fucking interesting. I think that's really, really interesting to see not having that overall and not, you know, getting that from a team is that you could have multiple of the same character on your team. And they changed that, and people were like, oh no, you're ruining it, you're getting it. And people quickly adapted and played it. And it's very normal now to have one character of each character on the team. I'm excited to see how this comp changed, and I really hope it gets implemented soon. I really hope. Ranked play has now started another season. Season 15 has just started. Paris has now been added into the competitive play. Paris is an interesting map. And I think not enough people have played Paris just yet. So I think it's going to be overall an interesting time. But I can't believe it. You know, I can't believe it or foresee what's going to happen. But I'm interested to see how playing around in a competitive team as I have the last yesterday. It's really interesting to see how different teams take on Paris or just haven't played Paris whatsoever. I have no idea what the fuck is going on or where the points are or what exactly they're doing. It's been a really fun set of games and a really fun year. I think that's all I've got to talk about. That's a fairly short episode for this week. But I think that's all I've got to discuss. I've done my predictions, done results. We've talked about, correction. Rainbow Six Siege, Burnt Horizon is the name of the operation, and Mozzie is the second character. But it's going to be a short one this week. Thank you very much for joining me on Early Late Nights. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Sorry for the shorter format, but it will be back to normal next week. If you want to follow us on our Twitter at ExplosionPod for all the latest from all of our other podcasts, as well as when I'm going live with this show, Early Late Nights. Please check out me on Twitter at your boy Ringo. Follow us, subscribe to us, youtube.com/explosionnetwork, and check out explosionnetwork.com for all your latest news and podcasts. Please, if you can be here live every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time, live on twitch.tv/explosionnetwork for all your esports news and action. Make sure you check us out. If you can't be here live, that's completely fine. Check out the video on demand at explosionnetwork.com, youtube.com/explosionnetwork, or any good podcasting service. The show will show up there. Give us a like, a subscribe, a follow, whatever you want to do. Enjoy it. I hope you have a good time. I hope you have a good day. Thank you very much for joining me, and have a good night.